welcome to another episode of the Geeks for the Win podcast, the podcast where we cover all things geeky. I am your host, William, known as Poetic Soul 44, and I'm joined with my co-host, Stuart,
known across the internet as Casual Terror,
and Henry.
What's going on, people? You know what it is. It's Knox.
Yes, we do. We ran so long last week. I'm making it my mission to try to shorten the show somewhat, which I don't think it'll be too hard since we went like 2 hours and 40 minutes, I think. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. Going to try to keep it an hour and a half to maybe 2 hours. I think that's the sweet spot in between there. At least it seems like for me, whenever I'm listening to podcasts, I don't mind if they go to 2 hours every now and then. But, alrighty, I guess we can get into our first topic, which is a couple, which is actually gaming related. I know last week we had a huge list of gaming related topics we discussed, and this week we have a few as well. Stacking, which is an arcade game that is on, Xbox Live Arcade, and it's free to play for PSN Plus members, which straight off the bat, I think that's pretty cool. They're allowing their users to play a brand new game that just came out instead of a game that's already been out for a while. I think the PlayStation Plus or whatever, yeah, PlayStation Plus, I think it's actually starting to actually become worth subscribing to. That said, I don't plan on subscribing anytime soon, but did you guys... well, you don't have a PS3, so that would kind of be pointless, but did you guys have a chance to play this demo?
Yeah, I played it. I mean, it's an alright game, and it has some pretty cool elements to it. I like the graphic design of it, but that's about as far as it goes for me. It really didn't grab me like I thought it would. I mean, because the concept looked pretty cool when I saw the trailers and stuff like that, but it wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah, it seemed interesting, but not for, what is it, 1,200 points, I think?
Yeah, $15.
Yeah, that it just seems a bit too overpriced for that much, but... I mean, if you got PlayStation Plus, you know, check it out, I guess, because it's, you know, you can play it for free. Stuart, did you get a chance?
I didn't play it, but I've seen somebody play it, so I know. I really liked kind of the Russian stacking dolls way, like it just changes the gameplay. That I don't know. I've never seen a game do something like that before. Because when you stack into another doll, like you become that doll, and you can use like special abilities and stuff.
Yeah.
Like there's a doll who farts, and another one that can, I don't know, tip his hat, just stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it would have come across a lot better if it was like maybe somewhere in between 400 and 800 Microsoft points, or $5 to $10, but 15 just seems a bit pricey. You got to have a really intense, you know, game that's got a lot of meat to it to charge 15 and expect a lot of people to pick it up.
Yeah,
especially recently in the past few months, a lot of $15 games have done pretty bad, like Breach, for example. I don't think a lot of people picked that game up because everyone just had complaints with it. But, you know, developers, they feel froggy, so they're going to try to see if they can charge $15 because there are people who will buy it, so.
Yeah. Well, I think it's more of Microsoft doing that because do you guys remember the Summer of Arcade last summer? Every game was $15. I'm talking about, I mean, even, you know, there's been a lot of arguments about this, but, you know, games like Limbo and that Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Both of those games are $15 too, and I mean every game it seems like it's just $15 now. You know, there's no mixture whatsoever. I mean, some of those games are not worth $15.
Yeah, definitely. I guess moving on to that, we got the house party coming up.
Yeah.
That's actually this week, this upcoming week. It starts, and the first game is Hard Corpse Uprising.
Yep.
Honestly, I've not seen too much on this, so I can't really say too much, but it looks interesting from the screenshot I'm looking at right now. Knox, do you know anything about it?
Yeah, Hard Corpse Uprising is actually the, I guess you would say, the spiritual predecessor of Contra. It actually takes place prior to what happens in the original Contra. I guess the heroes are the two military people that you play as are sort of like the prototypes to the Contra guys in this game. So you kind of play like the I don't know if it's necessarily an actual true backstory of Contra, but they say that it's based on the Contra world and based on the fiction. So I think it'll be kind of cool just to kind of see that kind of play out. But it is a co-op from what I can see from the screenshots and what they've been describing. It is co-op. So it should be a fun pick up and play game and stuff like that. But I don't know how many stages there are. They haven't really released any detailed information. But this is another one where it's $15, so it's kind of like, you know, I mean, but at least you'll get to play the demo, kind of see if you want to spend $15 on it. I just don't know how robust the game is.
Yeah, it does look co-op and. Yeah, at least two-player co-op. So, I mean, if it has, like, four-player co-op, then I'm sure that'll be a big hit. Because, you know, there hasn't really been anything co-op for people to play in a while. Seems like the games that have been coming out the last couple months have just been either multiplayer or single-player.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No in-between.
Yeah, so that'll be pretty cool. You got any thoughts on it, Stuart?
On the house party or hardcore uprising?
Hard Corpse Uprising.
I'm not a side scroller person. That's just, like, I just never really got into those games.
Alrighty. So that's fair.
It's not my cup of tea.
That's fair. The graphics look pretty good though. I mean, it looks beautiful from this picture I'm seeing.
Yeah, it's kind of got the cell shaded kind of 3D graphics in the background, and like the characters look like they're like hand drawn 2D.
Yeah, it's like that 2.5D or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, but I guess moving on is a game that's actually 800 Microsoft points, Bejeweled Blitz Live. Which I think everyone knows, Bejeweled.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's PopCap, so you're probably pretty excited, Will.
I don't know. I think I may pass it up because they have Bejeweled Blitz on Facebook that's 100% free.
Yeah.
And I end up playing that from time to time when I'm bored just because, you know, it's free. Why not? But it does look interesting because there's a 16-player party mode.
Yeah.
That seems interesting.
How's that going to work?
I have no idea.
That's going to work, but, you know.
I'm sure we'll end up finding out. I say I'm not going to buy it, but you're right. I'm probably may because I'm – I'm a sucker for PopCap games because they're so addictive. I mean, they just make quality games, honestly.
And yeah, I mean, it's just like me, man. I mean, I bought Plants vs. Zombies on my iPhone, the PC, and I have the hard disk version on Xbox 360. I did the same thing with what was that, Castle Crashers. I actually bought my cousin's Castle Crashers on his PS3, bought it on my 360, and have it on PS on the PC just because the game is so good.
Yeah, I've got Plants vs. Zombies on all three platforms too, or that you listed. I got Peggle at least twice, and I mean it. I got Bejeweled like on my iPod Touch, on the computer, on all kinds of stuff. So yeah, they know how to make simple games just so fun and just addictive, like I said. But I guess we'll find out whether I'm glad to see they're not charging $1,200 or $15 for it.
Yeah.
I think $10 is a smart move.
I think that's fair.
Definitely.
I mean, I wish it could be lower, but that 16-player party mode may prove to be, you know, something new as far as a game like this having 16-player mode. So.
Oh, definitely. And we'll find out in a couple weeks. So. Next is I think a lot of people have anticipated the remake of Beyond Good and Evil. I've anticipated it because I've never played the first one. And, you know, it's been rumored for I don't know how long that they were going to remake it. And I've just been holding out for that.
Yeah, I think this is the first one. I think they just kind of remade it in HD. Unfortunately, I was kind of hoping that you guys would actually know a little bit about the original because I never played the original. But this one probably is the one that I'm most curious about because I never played the original. But to see it, you know, remade in HD, it looks pretty good. Kind of like one of those games that I kind of skipped over. Like, you remember The Darkness on GameCube?
Yeah.
I've never played that either.
Oh,
and there was rumors about that one being remade, but it looks pretty good the way they remade it in HD.
Yeah, I'm definitely, you know, I've been waiting for them to remake this game because, you know, I think it's the original was it on PS2?
I think it was on PS2.
Yeah, and I don't want to have to go buy another PS2 just to play it or whatever. Yeah. So I've just been waiting for them to remake it. Because I've heard just so many people, you know, from podcasts just saying, you know, that we can't wait for Beyond Good and Evil 2 or the HD remake of the first one because it's such a good game. And I'm thinking, I want to play it. If it's so good, I want to play it.
Yeah, Beyond Good and Evil has definitely a cult following to it.
So
yeah.
I mean, is it a platformer, a puzzle platformer? Is it like an adventure game, sort of like Tomb Raider? Because like from all the screenshots, like it kind of looks like it has a hint of like Ratchet and Clank slash, you know, like Lara Croft with the protagonist. Like, what is it like? You know.
I don't know. I always thought it would be an action adventure type game.
Yeah.
Like a Lara Croft or something like that. But instead of remaking it and releasing it, like, you know, for $60 or whatever, they're doing it on live for $10. That's pretty good, I think.
Yeah. wasn't it supposed to be a Beyond Good and Evil 2? Because they were showing the trailers for it a pretty good while back or something like that?
I think it's supposed to come out end of the year, maybe.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that, people. But I guess the next game is a game I've played on the PC because I picked it up on one of the Steam sales where it was like $5, and that's Torchlight. And this will scratch that Diablo 3 itch. You know, a lot of people have been wanting.
Oh, definitely. Like this, I get, you know, I had Torchlight back when it first came out. I played that game to death.
Yeah, I'm curious how it will be on the console. Definitely going to try the demo out and see whether it'd be worth getting.
Well, I mean, a negative comment about Torchlight on the PC is that there's no co-op. You know, they keep saying, oh, you know, we're going to patch it in, we're going to patch it in. They never did. You know, we're just, oh, no, instead we're just going to make Torchlight 2 co-op. Okay, well, this, you know, for the Xbox 360, it's going to be co-op.
Yep.
Really? Or is that?
Yes.
It's confirmed? Wow.
Yes.
Then I'm definitely probably picking this up. Because I was really going to wait for the second one unless, you know, this really grabbed me on the – unless the trial really grabbed me on the 360. But if it's co-op, I'll just get that then because I was going to wait for the second one for that very reason. But, wow. But this one is $15, but I would say from playing the PC version, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It especially is. If there's co-op added. That'll be really cool.
So is this more or less class based? Like, you know, kind of like the Diablo series, or do you just kind of
yes.
run through as like one certain? Oh, okay, so it is.
Yeah, there's
it's a very
warrior,
much Diablo like.
See, an archer and a mage, I think. That's it.
Yeah. So this, like I said, this will definitely scratch that Diablo itch.
Well, I mean, well, this was made by the guys who did Diablo 1.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they left Blizzard and did their own thing, and this was one of the things they came up with.
Yeah, so I know a lot of – I've seen a lot of people anticipating this. Like Tin Pan from Open Forum Radio, I saw him tweeting about it. He was saying his wallet's going to be hurting for Torchlight and Dragon Age 2 coming out the same week.
Yeah,
I told him at least Torchlight isn't $60 game. That it could be worse. But next is the final one for the house party, and that is Full House Poker.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about this one.
You should be, because this was – I don't know if you remember, Stuart, that I was in a beta a while back. This was the beta I was in.
Oh, that it was? Okay.
Yes. This is
oh, what?
It's pretty fun. It's a really fun game. I mean, it's basically 30-minute like I guess episodes or you know game rounds, matches, games, whatever you want to call them. But and you can move depending on like if you're doing really well, it'll promote you to higher tables, or if you know lose all your money, you'll just be demoted to a lower class table.
Like yeah, I see that.
The double diamond table or the single diamond or triple stuff like that. So
I will be staying around the bottom.
Yeah. But it doesn't
poker.
Kick you. It doesn't kick you out completely for losing. I think that's a big. That's a really good thing. I like. And it's basically like 1 versus 100 meets poker.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. But that's kind of cool that you described it, you know, with like the different tiers, though. So that way you don't have like, you know, like this extravagantly good poker player playing against, you know, I mean, people who are kind of just getting their feet wet, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But and it's 800 points. It's too bad it's not free like 1 versus 100 was.
Yeah.
I think that would have been really awesome. But that didn't last too well, so hopefully, you know, since it is $10, that money can go towards supporting it more. And I honestly don't know if you're able to win prizes or not.
Haven't said anything yet, but I'm like you. I would gladly pay, you know, $5 or $10 to bring 1 versus 100 back because I didn't really care about the prizes at a certain point. I just like answering the trivia questions, but you know they try to rely on like advertising thing. Like, with the only advertiser they had, I think, was Sprint, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they try to rely on that too heavily, rather than just, I guess, just charging for it. So hopefully, you know, by paying $10, they'll keep the servers open and keep it going. Because, I mean, I just like partying, and it looks like there's 8 avatars at the table. So, is it? I mean, from the beta, like, does it seem like it's like an 8-player table?
Yeah, the tables are about 8 eight players. Yeah.
Man, that's awesome, man.
Definitely, and I'm a huge Texas Hold'em fan, so I'm looking forward.
If it was blackjack, that'd be my game. I'm I'm good at blackjack, not poker.
I don't know if blackjack would do so well starting it out, because blackjack's just really quick. It is a quicker game than Texas Hold'em. So
yeah,
I mean,
Texas Hold'em is a little bit more methodical.
Yeah, I mean, they may, if this does well, they may come out with a blackjack one, but I think Texas Hold'em's was a good choice for trying this new type out.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be down for all kinds of other games like this. You know, like blackjack or like a spades game too. That'd be pretty cool, but I'm just upset that this is going to be the last of the house party. We got to wait till March 16th for it, because I had so much fun in that beta.
Yeah, but like you were saying, Stuart, about like the blackjack. I mean, I really hope that this gets support. I mean, I'm going to buy it day one just because I really want to support it, and I like most of the Avatar games, like 1 vs. 100, and like most of the other games that they have on XBLA, mm-hmm. even like down to like Uno. I like those too. But just think about if they release like little DLC packs for it, like they do for Game Room. I mean, I don't know if anybody follows Game Room, but they release they're like on what pack 12 now, 13 or something like that.
Well, they kind of stopped.
Yeah, but think about it. Think about if they release, like a blackjack table pack, and that does really, really good. And then all of a sudden, there's this big like blackjack, Russian roulette, and you got the Texas Hold'em table. So it's like it turns from just Texas Hold'em, and it turns into Xbox Live Casino or something like that. And you can hop on different modes and different DLCs and stuff like that. I think that'll be cool if it gets popular.
Definitely. And also, real quick, I really enjoyed the fact that it'll at the end of the rounds or whatever, it'll show like the top players or the best moves, the best hands. Like as far as if say I got a straight flush, that was the best hand, it would say that, and it would give you extra points. For that, and it would show your avatar in front of everybody else and stuff like that. I mean, there was a few other end of the round spotlights. I can't remember all of them, but the best move was one of them, so that's pretty cool. And I actually did get a couple of them. I mean, granted, it was a beta, so there wasn't a huge amount like there will be, but it was pretty cool and pretty fun.
Okay. Well, when you were in the beta, like, do you remember on 1 vs. 100, like, as you rank up, you get like different dances, and as you rank up, you got like you got like extra little things where you could pick faster responses and stuff like that. Like, is it kind of similar to that?
As far as there is like a leveling up system, you will get different levels, but there wasn't too much like with the levels that I noticed. But I'm sure they added something, because you do level up. There is like level 1, 2, 3 as far as how many points you get.
Oh, okay.
You do level up, so. At least that's how the beta was. I'm assuming it'll be the same, but yeah. I just lucked out into getting the beta. I was just surfing some Microsoft's websites, and just saw a sign up, and I signed up, and then all of a sudden I got to it, and I didn't know it was going to be something this big. But definitely picking it up day one as well. And that's the Xbox Live Arcade House Party. I'll probably pick up a few of these games for sure. Definitely going to try the demos.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about Torchlight, but I'm most definitely going to pick up the Texas Hold'em.
Yeah. I real quick, I did there was some glitches that I did notice and I did report. Like one, when you would be waiting for a table, you would be like sitting on sitting on someone's lap, waiting for you know, someone to leave a table, because you would get promoted to like the double diamond table, but it would be the table you'd be at would be full, so you would have to wait for someone to get demoted.
Oh.
And ways you would get promoted would be like the winner of the next round will get promoted, you know, so it's not just like, you know, you have the highest total, you get promoted or whatever. You can actually get promoted to the next level just for winning that round. But yeah, that's the Xbox Live Arcade House Party. I think that this promotion, or this, you know, house party type summer arcade, whatever they want to call it, I think this is the best one yet, in my opinion.
Yeah, they have a pretty robust lineup.
Because, I mean, I could see myself being interested in all these games if the demos are appealing. I mean, but I guess we can go on to Guitar Hero and DJ Hero are about to be done. Activision basically called it quits for the Guitar Hero series, and I'm guessing and the DJ Hero as well. Basically the Hero, anything with Hero. They're not releasing any games this year, and it's kind of been tricky whether or not, because it said they're not going to release any games this year, and they're going to stop supporting the DLC, but, you know, that it doesn't say it's done for good. I haven't seen anything where it says there will never be another Guitar Hero game. I'm sure they'll, once they think they can, you know, respawn it, they can basically do that. I'm sure they will, because it's Activision. If they can make money on and not, you know, have to spend a lot, I'm sure they will. But I think their big mistake was releasing so many games, because there's like over 25 of them. I was tweeting with Cookie about this.
25, really?
25 Guitar Hero games. Yeah. Where Rock Band has like 6, I think.
Yeah.
All, you know, 6, but they do their DLC well. They have over, I think, over 2,000 premium songs, not to mention the Rock Band Network, where they have the, I guess, indie bands can basically, or, you know, less popular bands can bring their music for lower prices.
Yeah, exactly. And see, I think what kind of killed them too is that with almost every iteration of Guitar Hero, they always bring out more plastic instruments. Like, you know, just set a standard and say, hey, these are the plastic doohickeys that you're going to have to use for the remainder of whenever we have this franchise. And just download DLC or buy this disc pack for – I mean, honestly, I think that every iteration of the game – shouldn't be no more than $40, you know. I mean, charging $60 for what? How many songs did you get on, like?
You get like 80, I think.
Yeah, you know.
At least on the Rock Band, you get like 80 or whatever. But yeah, Guitar Hero. It seemed like they not only came out with new instruments. I don't have a problem with coming out with new instruments. It's just when you need those new instruments to get the full experience.
Yeah.
They come out with one with the slider, you know, that's, you know, right where the button, you know, below the neck and stuff like that, and just different variations. I mean, because, you know, you're going to have new people. You're going to have new people come into the genre who will want newer guitars. So making the newer instruments, you know, you can't fault them for that, but making it where you have to buy them to get the full experience.
Yeah, and then the money that you spent on investing in that plastic stuff, when you go to trade it in or when you go to try to, you know, resell it, you can't get nowhere near what you spent on it, you know?
Yeah, because they keep coming out with newer ones, or they're not valid with the newer ones because you don't get the full experience.
See, instead of just coming out with, you know, just the new games and stuff, they just kind of come out with song packs instead of what they did.
Yeah, well, like I think they were. That's what Rock Band does.
Yeah, I think they were trying to do that towards the end, you know, towards the last few months, you know, last maybe 6 months. I think Guitar Hero was trying to do that, but, and, you know, with Rock Band, you can, you know, when I had Rock Band 1 and I got 2, I could, you know, pay $10 and, you know, export all the my Rock Band 1 songs onto my hard drive. And you can do that with all the other Rock Band games as well, except for Beatles. You can't do it with Beatles. But, like, if you got Green Day Rock Band, you can export all those songs onto your hard drive. Or, you know, you get Rock Band 3, you can export all the Rock Band 2 songs onto your – so basically you're able to – when you upgrade games, you can still keep your songs and play all your collection. I think that's a big thing with Rock Band that's good on their part.
Yeah. So do you think Activision will learn from this experience and, I guess, stop oversaturating their franchises like a COD or, you know?
No, I don't think they will. As long as they think they can, I think they'll try to milk whatever they can.
Well, I think since DJ Hero's also on, you know, on this list, you know, saying they're not going to do anymore, I think they have learned with music games they can't do that. But, you know, they're still going to do it with Call of Duty because people keep buying it.
Modern Warfare 2 was the biggest entertainment launch in history, and then Black Ops beat that. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive. Not just, you know, game launch, but biggest entertainment launch. I mean,
I just wish that they wouldn't do that because. I mean, even though in spite of, you know, my underlining, you know, dislikeness of COD, like, I still remember, you know, the original Call of Duty 4. I mean, that game was epic. I mean, it told a nice story. It was fun, bite-sized chunks of just action and just, you know, even a level of realism. And then, you know, you get these yearly iterations, especially on a shooter. I mean, I've said this before to y'all. It just feels like after I've ranked up and I've prestiged and I've, you know, kind of arrived at this pinnacle and I've got the symbols and everything else or whatever, it feels like it's quickly taken away because within 3 months' time or, you know, of the time of me actually playing the game and ranking up, here's the next thing. And so it's kind of like I lose all that stuff that I had, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. As much as I was praising Rock Band, I've got to say one thing. Rock Band, I was looking at the DLC, the new DLC. I mean, they've got some pretty good stuff that I was about to buy. And then I found out through Twitter that someone pointed me out to a link about it. But all the new DLC since Rock Band 3 came out is just for Rock Band 3 and not for Rock Band 2, which really kind of sucks because you were able to with Rock Band when Rock Band 2 came out, you were still able to use the DLC, the new stuff for Rock Band 1. Oh, so okay. I got to get Rock Band 3 to be able to buy all the new DLC. And
so you can buy up, you just can't transfer down.
Well, with the new Rock Band 3, yeah, but before you could. But I don't know why they have it this way, but
well, probably because with Rock Band 3, they got the keyboard.
That's true, but yeah. The keyboard you can, I don't know. I thought it was because of the pro instruments, you know, the actual.
That too.
It's you have to pay an additional like $1 for the pro instrument versions of the songs. So I don't know, but I looked on like Amazon or GameStop, some website, and it's like $39.99 now. So, just for the Rock Band 3 game, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad at all.
I mean, it definitely dropped, and with, you know, Guitar Hero going bye-bye. I mean, this month they're releasing the last of the DLC, and then it's no more for the time being anyways. Rock Band's just going to be banking because there's still people who love, you know, the music instrument games because, you know, drunk people still need stuff to do when they're at parties. Definitely. I mean, I've had tons of Rock Band parties with alcohol and whatnot, and it's just so fun. Especially, a lot of people will say, you know, I'll never sing in a damn, you know, I'll never sing in public or do karaoke. But if you get enough liquor in them, they'll rip the mic right out of your hands. And that's when you need to pull out your camera phone.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
But I also think that it's – go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, Dance Central is just as good because, you know, you don't have to sing. You don't have to do anything. You just dance.
Exactly.
And I was my dad saw me playing Dance Central the other day. He said, you know, you can do the moves, but you're still white, so.
Damn. That's cold.
Thanks,
from your
Dad,
own
for
dad.
The bowl of confidence.
Bringing you back to reality. I was looking to see how the games were selling, and Rock Band 3 actually wasn't selling that well at all. Hasn't been selling too well at all. And the new Guitar Hero game was actually selling better than Rock Band 3. So it kind of confused me why they were calling it quits on Guitar Hero when it was doing better. But then again, you know, Rock Band's been making their money through the DLC. So I don't know, but I saw somewhere that's 500 people losing their jobs from Guitar Hero / DJ Hero.
Yeah.
I can't believe it takes them that many people to basically make the, you know, map button presses to music. Because I'm about to get a little geeky here, but back when Guitar Hero was out for the PS2, when Guitar Hero like 2 and 3 it just launched, there was actually a way where you could basically a modding community where you could put your PS2 game, you know, basically copy all the files off that onto the actual game, and then download some programs and find your own. There was a big list of like the, I guess, music sheets for songs, and you could find your own songs and the music sheets and basically burn onto a DVD your own music Guitar Hero type game. It'd be the same, you know, same everything, but you would switch out the songs and stuff and then burn it onto the DVD, and you would have to, like, there was some switch you had to put on your PS2, you know, to switch out the discs real quick, because you would put the regular Guitar Hero game in and then add, like, the loading screen where it showed the logo for the Guitar Hero. You would switch out the game and then put in your, you know, your version of it. And I did that a lot because, you know.
Oh, wow.
That was before DLC, you know. That was back when it was just on the PS2. But so, I mean, with programs and stuff like that, it's not too difficult to make them.
I kind of used to do the same thing, only I used to play Frets on Fire, which is, you know, it's a computer game, and you use your keyboard. The F1 through 5 keys. You kind of hold it like a guitar, and you press the enter key to strum.
Yeah, but looking back on it, that was probably one of my most geekiest moments, was doing that for Guitar Hero. Wow. I mean, but if someone, you know, if you could get if you had the program and you could do stuff like that, like, you know, a high school kid like me, if I could do that, you know, why does it take 500 people to do that for, you know, the Guitar Hero games, even if they've got, you know, a bunch that they release at a time? I don't understand that, but it is a bummer that 500 people are losing their jobs. Hopefully they can, you know, find jobs somewhere else, maybe with Rock Band or something like that. Yeah. Maybe Rock Band's hiring.
I don't know, they're having 500 people.
Yeah, crazy. I guess after that we can... We were talking about Torchlight scratching that Diablo itch. Well, Diablo might come to the consoles. I know that's been a big rumor for the last few years, but I guess it's becoming more likely now.
Yeah. I mean, if this happens, I think that this will be a successful console. Kind of transition from like the PC, because I think Diablo can be played, you know, on a console, especially with the stuff that they're doing with Torchlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, was it Diablo 1 or Diablo 2 was on PlayStation, so.
Yeah, I think it was so Diablo it can, 1.
So it can definitely be done.
But was that version of Diablo on PlayStation, was that good?
I think it was actually not that bad.
Yeah, I can't really remember because, I mean, it's been so long. But I think the Diablo that they're talking about that they're going to make for consoles – will actually, because from all the screenshots that I've seen and the articles that I've read, they're using all Diablo 3 screenshots. I mean, you know, with the in-engine stuff that they've shown. So I think that they're actually talking about actually bringing Diablo 3 maybe, or maybe like a spinoff of some sort which uses the same engine on the consoles, which would be huge.
Oh, definitely, especially for mm-hmm. people like... Tin Pan from OFR, he's been waiting for Diablo 3 for a while, and I don't know if he has a computer that'd be able to run it or not. I think that would appeal a lot of people who have gotten out of the PC world but who still want to, you know, play Diablo 3 when it comes out. Because a lot of people have switched from PC to the console just because they don't want to have to deal with upgrading computers and, you know, having to basically have the right hardware to run the right, you know, games. It's all, you know, you got a 360, you buy 360 games. Same with PS3. That's been appealing for a lot of people. And, you know, it'll definitely sell a lot more copies for sure because, you know, more platforms means more people who can get their hands on it. Especially the people who aren't PC gamers who have heard about Diablo, you know, from PC gamers. You know, because I have friends who have never played Diablo but who have heard me talk about it nonstop and, you know, heard my hype-ness for the third one and, you know, who would probably pick it up to see, you know, what's this all about. So it would definitely be a big move whether or not it's actually Diablo 3 or it's just a, you know, like you said, a different type of Diablo game. I don't know, but I guess we'll find out whether it's can be successful with when Torchlight comes out on the consoles.
Yeah. But go ahead.
Oh, but you know that Diablo name is going to sell though. I mean you stick Diablo anything on Xbox Live, you put it on there for $10. I mean it'll fly off there.
Oh, I think if it's a full retail game, $60, it'll still sell well. Yeah. I mean, enough to justify putting it on the consoles anyways. I don't think they'll lose any money at all. it also depends on the timing when they release it. Because if they release it like during, you know, if it does come out this year and it's released during the fall, that maybe, you know, it may not do as well as it could, like, say, beginning of the year's been crazy this year, but you know what I mean, in a drought period.
Yeah.
Because this fall we got, you know, Gears of War 3, the new Call of Duty game, that's going to sell. Uncharted 3, yeah, Skyrim. You know, and just a bunch of other games. But, it depends on when they actually do release it. Me, personally, I don't think we're going to see it for at least 2 more years. Diablo 3, anyways. Maybe this Diablo game for the consoles will be a teaser for Diablo 3.
If it's anything different than the PC version, people are going to get mad.
I'm sure they will.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be the exact same game, only, you know, with, you know, like an MMO or something like that, you can't do on the console because you need a full keyboard to use it well. A game like Diablo, you don't need you can use, you know, a controller, and you'd do just fine.
Definitely. The graphics I don't think are going to be too overpowering.
No,
I don't think so either.
So, you know, it won't have to. So I don't think the graphics will look nearly as bad as, say, you know, when Crysis came out, if it would have been on the 360 versus the, you know, PC. I don't think it'd be near as different as that would have been.
Yeah, I mean, but you're always gonna have your PC purists that are gonna, you know, find something to pick at it. I mean, the graphics will never be as good as PC. We know that. I mean, the controls are not gonna be as robust as hotkeys on a keyboard and mouse. We know that. I mean, so you'll have somebody that'll always find something about it. But I mean, like the thing that I think about is a game like Halo Wars. I mean, Halo Wars kind of showed that you can do an RTS, you know, as simplistic as it is, you know, be that as it may, it was still a very, you know, good, successful little RTS that you can kind of jump in and play if you're kind of new to that genre. And personally, I was at that time, but that kind of made me want to, you know, go out and, you know, seek out, you know, the StarCrafts and things like that, you know, of the PC world, you know. But I think that they could do it with a couple hotkeys, couple buttons, and just make it real super simplistic. And then if you want to, you know, I really don't know why Microsoft hasn't done this, but they need to bring out a mouse and keyboard adaptation for the 360. That's like the only thing they haven't done yet. And it'll be so incredibly easy because they make mouse and keyboards.
Yeah, definitely. But Microsoft has a thing where they want to distinguish the 360 from the PCs. That's why you'll never see Internet Explorer on the 360. They've made that clear. They want to, you know, distinguish it that it's not a PC, because it's, you know, I don't know why, but
yeah.
I mean, they have Internet Explorer. I think there'd be so many people who would be happy to have Internet Explorer on their Xbox, but
that's all the 360 needs is a browser.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and you are Microsoft. I don't understand, because see, they always tout that, just like you said, William, but then they always say, we want the 360 to be the most complete system, you know, and we want it to have everything. Well, give me a browser. If you want it to be my home media center, you know, let me stop adapting media center. Let me just have it on my browser. Let me access all this stuff through a browser.
But then they can't sell you two versions of, you know, they can't sell you the 360 and a PC. You'd have people like Cookie who, you know, if he could get Internet Explorer on his 360, or did he, I don't know if he still has his 360 or not, but when he did, you know, if he could have gotten it on a 360, he'd be set.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, mm-hmm. I mean, they can make it, you know, just like a regular, I don't know, kind of like a nerfed or dumbed down version, just like the PS3 has, or even the Wii has. I mean, you can go on the Wii and access YouTube and Google and, you know, so on and so forth. And that's, you know, saved me a couple times when I've been, you know, sitting there playing, you know, Super Mario Brothers or Galaxy or something like that. I hop on the internet right quick and go to the Wii shop and search for stuff or whatever. And
you
know,
oh, yeah.
Real quick in and out, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, up until they patched it like last year.
Yeah.
or fixed or prevented it, I would go on Hulu on the PS3 web browser.
Yeah.
You know, you were able to do that until Hulu did whatever they did to prevent it because of Hulu Plus. But I mean,
yeah, I don't mind that. I just like, you know, say for instance, you know, we're thinking about doing podcasts right quick, and then we go to, you know, to the URL and, you know, look at the show notes and then go back and play the game. You know, I don't know how you guys set up, but I got my PC. I got two PCs. I got a PC in my back room, and then, well, there's one in my room, but my 360 is in the living room, so I have to kind of jump off the 360, go take my notes on, you know, on my iPhone and kind of go back and forth. It'd be so much easier if I can just go to that website, write it on my iPhone, and send it to my email, because I got a browser on my 360. It's so much easier.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, I guess while we're talking about things that they should do, add to the 360, if they were able to somehow do multitasking.
Oh, yeah.
Where you, mm-hmm. you know, you could pause the game and then go check out something else and, you know, basically just, you know, like I said, multitasking different, like the PC does, you know, different windows and
yeah, exactly.
whatnot. That would be huge. But yeah. They want you to have your PC and your 360 because
yeah,
they make more money.
At it. Yeah, they kind of hinted at it on during CES, but I don't know if they're going to do it. But I'm totally for multitasking because, like, applications like Facebook on 360, Twitter especially – and stuff like Last.fm.
Definitely.
Why can't I play Last.fm and go through the dashboard and just browse around while my Last.fm is playing in the background?
Or have
like,
Last.fm
so cool.
play while you're playing like Halo Reach.
Right, exactly. Or either have your Twitter application in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, and whenever you want to access it, just hit the little dashboard button and go to Twitter, type a message in, and go back to your game. Like, that'd be so cool if they had that type of integration in there. But
yeah, with Twitter and Facebook, the way it is on there, nobody ever uses it because it takes so long.
Yeah, it's and true. it takes you completely out of the dashboard and goes into its own single place.
Yeah, it's definitely retarded, dumbed down versions of the actual programs. I mean, I don't remember the last time I've used. I think I used Twitter and Facebook back when it launched, just to try it out.
Yeah, to say the tweet, hey, I'm tweeting on my Xbox, that everybody
yeah.
did, and then that was it. Never,
back to
never
gaming.
Use it again.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I kind of use it from time to time when I get lazy and I don't want to get up and get my phone, but like you said, it takes so long to access it sometimes, you're like, oh, I'll just get up.
Yeah, because, you know, there's the loading, and then you got to log in, and then the exiting out. I mean, it's really just a pain.
Yeah.
It's more work than, you know, especially now that we all, you know, now that smartphones are more popular, it's easier just to, you know, tweet from our phones or check Facebook that way.
Yep.
But, yeah, Microsoft needs to listen. We have some good ideas.
And we know you're listening.
Yeah, or someone who can share our ideas to them. But yeah, that would definitely be a big thing.
And that's Diablo on consoles.
Exactly. I was tangents. But I guess we can kind of maybe step away from gaming. Yeah, and I guess Arkham City. There's going to be a comic book miniseries, which Arkham City is Arkham Asylum's basically the sequel.
Right.
And I know I'm definitely looking forward to the Arkham City because I was a huge fan of Arkham Asylum. That game was just amazing. And I'm definitely going to probably pick up the comic book series, the mini series, because it'll be game related, and it's definitely going to be easy to get into, because the problem with comics now is there's a lot of series that are like on issue like 135 or whatever, and it's just so hard to get into because, you know, you'll miss a lot, but this goes straight with the game, you know, with the game, I'm sure. So,
yeah, it actually happens right before the game begins. So,
it's a transition into and two.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they actually pretty much paint a picture, and they say, you know, after reading these comics, you will be able to, you will be familiar with the fiction that happened before after Arkham Asylum, and go directly into Arkham City, and you'll have this huge, robust knowledge of the world and what happened at this point. So, seems pretty cool. I mean, and the issues they aren't too bad. In this post, they have the paperback versions are going to be $3, and then, you know, there's a couple other issues that'll be 99 cents. So they'll just release them, and they're going to be digital and hardback. So
I'm hoping they'll have like a special edition, not like the Batarang one that was like 100 and something, but, you know, maybe like an $80, $79.99 edition where it will come with the comics. I think
they should.
If they do that, I would get that. Yeah, I would definitely be more likely to get, you know, spend a bit more to get the special edition if it came with the comic series.
Yeah, same.
But like I said, not for 100 and what? Was it 150? I think it was 130 for the.
Yeah, I think it was
Super Batarang edition. Yeah. Which I mean,
but you got a Batarang though.
I know it. I was about to say the Batarang idea was cool, but you know, $130. I'll pass. But I gotta finish Arkham Asylum. I'm like at the very end. I was talking to a friend about that actually yesterday. You really need to finish that. I just – other stuff came up because it came out right before, you know, the fall lineup of – actually, I think the game that followed that was Borderlands. So – and we all know
– What happened with you and Borderlands?
Exactly. But, yeah, definitely looking forward to that. I guess we can next would be the Verizon iPhone launched finally. You know, yay, everyone's been waiting for Verizon's iPhone to come out, but did anybody buy it? There really weren't any crowds like the, you know, every other iPhone launch, you know, to come out, whether or not, you know, that's due to people in their contracts or, you know, not wanting to switch yet. I don't know, but there wasn't any big launch like every other iPhone, you know, to come out has had, you know, the people camping out nights before.
Yeah. I think people are getting a whole lot smarter. Because I talk to a lot of people at, you know, at my job who are in no wise savvy on any of this stuff, and they're like, you know, because of course they look across the table, and I have an iPhone 3G. They look to the left of the, you know, of their desk, and their friend has an iPhone 4. They have a 3GS. So people are getting wiser to how technology is moving so quickly. So I think people are kind of holding their money, you know, for a minute just to kind of see if there's something else that's going to come out, which there will be.
Yes, and I want to just acknowledge something that was said in the chat by Devious Mr. Mac. Android for the win. But, the Android phones have been making a lot of, you know, they're actually outselling the iPhones. They have been for, you know, I think the last 6 months. And, you know, they're just coming out with newer ones. You got the Atrix 4G that's coming out, the ones that can dock into computers. You got the Sony's Xperia Play that's going to be able to play, like, you know, actually has gamepad on it, so you can play, you know, PlayStation 1 games and, you know, other PlayStation type games. You know, you got the all, you know, the MyTouch 4G or whatever, the Evo phones from Sprint. I mean, Android just, you know, they're all over. Every carrier, you know, has an Android phone. So I just thought it was funny that, for, you know, everyone has been saying for years, you know, they've just been waiting for Verizon to get the iPhone, and nothing really has, you know, it's just all smoke, it seems like.
Yeah, and I want to mention that video that was in our show notes of a Verizon store opening up on the day of release of the Verizon iPhone. They had the entire, you know, Verizon employees there, you know, ready for the masses, and two people walk in.
Yeah.
That was it.
And like look, and one of the employees is like, come here, come on, come on, come here. Welcome, welcome. Please don't leave.
And everybody's all clapping, and, you know, then it pans left, and you see, like, those chained off lines, just empty.
Yeah.
And you see the elderly person who's walking around the mall, like at all malls they have. Yeah, it's definitely funny. And, you know, we'll have it in the show notes, show listings. We're going to start posting the links that we have on our show notes on the actual show posts, so you can check all the stuff that we've looked at on thegeeksftw.com whenever, you know, we post the show.
Did you see the old guy that walked by too, like you guys were talking about? He's like one of those mall walkers where he has his running shoes on, his sweats.
Yeah.
He's got his headphones on.
He's probably like, what's going on in there? Huh?
Yeah.
Nothing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No one's in there? Okay. Keep on walking.
Yeah. I also want to mention that people, you know, watching Lost Live on Ustream can actually see a picture of the launch line. I counted 7 people, maybe.
Yeah.
So.
Pretty crazy. I guess sticking with mobile devices, cell phones, we kind of touched a little on this on the Who Am I number 5, I think it was.
It was number 5.
Yeah, but no one seemed to really say too much when I brought it up. Hopefully hopefully y'all will have more opinions on this show. But the HTC is investing $40 million into OnLive for games for smartphones. Now, when I saw that, I was thinking, holy crap, we're already having phones that are as powerful as, you know, certain computers, you know. But now that now HTC is, you know, pushing for, you know, OnLive to be able to put games where you don't exactly need dual core processing phones.
Yeah.
I mean, because everything with the thing with OnLive is everything's rendered and everything's processed and, you know, ran, you know, on servers hundreds of miles away, if not thousands. So
yeah.
And from what I've seen and heard, the OnLive service for the computers actually work really well.
Yeah, they had a couple reviews out for them. They said, you know, it actually, I mean, if you have a pretty good connection, it actually does a very good job of actually doing it. Have they figured out the pricing structure of it, though? Like, is it going to be monthly? Is it not going to be monthly? Are they going to charge you for content? Are they going to charge you monthly and for content? Like, that was kind of the biggest.
I don't think it's monthly. I don't think it's monthly. I think you can buy per game, and they have a subscription plan. I've been getting emails, and for, like, I think it's $19.99 a month. You can basically it's a, you know, choose and pick through, like, a list of games they have, and you can just play as many of those as you want while you're subscribed.
So it's like a buffet cable service.
Yeah, basically. Like, there's maybe a list of 30 games for that 1999 that you can play through, you know.
But see, what happens when, like, new games come out, though? You know what I'm saying? Like, because games are not like channels. Like, games are ever moving, ever being created, ever, you know, being released, you know. So what happens if 2011, you get Skyrim, you get DC Universe, you get Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, and you get Halo Reach or whatnot. So what happens when, you know, next year or this year when Halo, you know, remake comes out and things like that? Like, how do you create a fair pricing structure for that? Like, do you keep increasing my bill? Because I don't want to lose my old games, you know?
Well, I think you'll be able to buy them individually, you know, and as time passes, you know, I don't think they're going to – well, maybe they will put newer games on this all-you-can-eat plan. But I think, you know, once, like, time passes, they'll put the games on the all-you-can-eat plan for the people who, you know, I've played Call of Duty and, you know, Halo Reach, but I never got around to Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. So, you know, this might be the ticket for me, you know. I can play that and some other and a few other games that I never got around to because I had to choose during a slow period of time.
Yeah.
But the way I see it is this could really, like, help, say, Android, which HTC is – they're mostly Android phones. Because there's certain games where you can't play because, you know, your phone's not, you know, if you have a phone that doesn't have, like, if you have one of the first Android phones, it may not be, you may not be able to run the certain game, you know, like, Game Dev Story or?
Yes, Game Dev Story.
Yeah. Like that, for example, you may not be able to run that on the very first. The G1 that T-Mobile released, the very first Android phone, you may not be able to, but with OnLive, maybe you could. Maybe you could play these games, or, you know, maybe you can get the Xperia Play and you can play, like, you know, maybe 360 type or PS PlayStation type games on your devices.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is this only going to, like, just like mobile games, you know, like, hey, I'm going to pay $19 a month to play Angry Birds. What?
Well, there's no pricing for the smartphone games.
Well,
but
yeah, but
it's to help on smartphones. So maybe improve the quality of the games that are on smartphones. You may be able to just, you know, pay like $10 to be able to play, you know, Assassin's Creed on your phone, on your Xperia Play or some other type of, you know, smartphone. It may just be game by game. I don't know. It's just I put this up on the topics because basically the possibilities, you know, OnLive it's proven itself that it does work. It just needs to, you know, it just needs to promote itself and get out there more, I think.
And yeah.
It may be on the it's better suited on the mobile smartphones. You know.
Yeah, the only problem with that is and the only reason why I say this is because of the fact that I got Time Warner, so I experience, you know, internet outages at the most inopportune times. And if my internet is out, you know, I can't access my content, you know?
Yeah.
So that's just the only thing that just really scares me about the whole downloadable age of gaming, you know, in general, whether it be mobile or consoles. Because if I have a physical disc, I can still pop that disc in and not be on Xbox Live or, you know, the PlayStation Network or what have you, and I can still play my games and still have an enjoyable experience. I just like to own, you know, my content. So I kind of, and then like the whole pricing structure, like it sounds good in theory, but I mean, are you really going to want to pay for this buffet and keep changing it back and forth? Because you know, they're going to change your prices. Like when you add more content and you know, some of those old games, you may want to go back and play one day. just like we do most of the time. I mean, we all, you know, are on Twitter. Sometimes somebody will pop up and say, hey, let's play Castle Crashers. Somebody will pop up and say, hey, let's play the original Ninja Turtles game. So do you, you know, get rid of those games? No, because you want to play them, you know, or there may be a possibility that you may want to have that game there so you can play it, you know?
Yeah, I definitely understand that. And that's why I'm thinking maybe OnLive will be best suited for smartphones when you don't have to rely on, you know, home internet.
Yeah, 3G.
Yeah, 3G or 4G, and yeah, stuff like that. I mean, the possibilities, we don't really, there are a lot of great possibilities with this. I mean, and I'm just glad to see that, you know, HTC, they've put out some of the best smartphones on, you know, out there. They have the Droid Incredible. They have they make the MyTouch phones for T-Mobile. They make the Evo 4G for Sprint. I mean, they have a big chunk of the smartphone market, so they know what they're doing. Hopefully, I'm trusting them with this, and hopefully it'll turn out to be something fantastic.
You know what they could do? They could try to, you know, match it up like they do, like most of the 3G plans. I don't know if you guys have read this, but they're coming. But I think AT&T is thinking about coming out with a $35 plan for the data usage. Like, what if, you know, they said, hey, if you want unlimited gaming content, pay an additional $30 a month with whatever provider you you go with. Or if you want, you know, I don't know, you know, 5 gigs worth of data per month to play whatever games you want. So that way you're not limited to just these certain titles or certain titles that you pick. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, let's face it. I mean, people like us, I mean, we play games all the time and we want to know what's new. We want to play the old stuff. We want to constantly be moving around, you know, getting the, you know, the latest content.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of different possibilities, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more about this, because I'd be interested on seeing what kind of games I can play on my phone besides Angry Birds and Bejeweled and Tetris. Okay, and you know, so
yeah.
I guess we can move on unless y'all have anything else to say. Stuart?
Nope. We just kind of have to wait and see kind of what this is going to be. And yeah, that's kind of it.
Alrighty. Yeah. Next topic is, will 3D be the next big shift in home entertainment, such as channel stereo to surround sound, VHS to DVD, SD to HD? Personally, I'd like 3D. I mean, the type I've seen, the good 3D that I've seen, like Avatar, for example, or Tron did it pretty well. You know, you have some 3D movies that are just horrible that probably they just shoehorned it in, like My Bloody Valentine 3D, you know, or I honestly don't know how the Green Hornet, you know, I don't know about that, but you know, you have the Final Destination, you know, in 3D and stuff like that, the really horrible 3D where it's just cheesy stuff that pops out. I think 3D could be a big, big thing. I mean, like I said, it'd have to be good quality, like the Avatar did, where it added depth to it and not just stuff popping out at you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, kind of the reason why I kind of brought this up is because ever so often, it usually happens between like every 5 to 10 years, we get some big movement in the home theater area. You know, like when you went from 2-channel stereo where you just had, you know, 2 floor speakers, you know, where it tried to semi-map out surround sound, then now you have receivers that can actually, you know, duplicate an actual theater-type surround where you have it all pretty much kind of, you know, all around you. Then, like, the next thing was, like, you know, when you had the whole Betamax, you know, VHS war, and kind of VHS kind of won out that. And then you had the next shift, which was DVD. You know, then, of course, you had the mandated stuff by the government to go from, you know, regular, you know, NTSC TV to ACSC, which is, you know, going from regular standard def TV to HD. But, like, those are the big shifts. Like, I don't think that 3D is – I think I don't know. I just think 3D is a novelty. Like, I think it's cool to have, or it's cool to watch for, you know, a movie or so or whatever. But I don't think that the mass consumer is running out to go get it, because like take something, you know, as small as VHS to DVD. When VHS was here and DVD came out, DVD was huge because now you don't have to rewind, you don't have to you know, fast forward to get to a certain part of the movie. DVD, it has tracks. It's a whole lot better quality. It's not 4x3 screens anymore. Now it's in full widescreen. The picture quality was night and day, as far as the difference in it. VHS tapes, you know, degrade over time. I mean, they sit up on your shelf, and, you know, that's actual film, and it goes bad. So I think DVD to, like, the mass consumer was like, you know, you had to have it because there were so many more advantages to DVD than it was VHS. But I don't think 3D, like, when you add 3D to HD, I don't think 3D is, like, you know, calling people to say, you have an HD TV, but this is 3D, and it's so much more of a shift, and it's so much better, because I just don't feel that it is.
Well, yeah. I really think it could really catch on more than it has if they can get rid of the glasses.
Well, they've gotten rid of it because they've actually made, you know, the screens for the 3DS, and there are some companies that are looking at technology. I mean, and you already know it's a matter of time before they put it onto a regular screen.
Well, so, they already have TVs like that. They showed them at the CES.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they had, you know, when 3D was, you know, back in the 80s or something like that, you know, computer screens, there was a 3D computer screen that you could do without glasses. You just have to have your head at a certain spot.
Yeah.
But I'm saying if you could actually move around and still get the 3D,
when you get into, like, the holograms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, do you really think that 3D is, like, the next big thing in home theater? Like, you know, just, like, take you know, standard def to high def. Like, you know, it was mandated by the government, you know, for years, and then they finally got everybody, you know, kind of on board. I just don't see 3D as being as big as those things are, or as those things were, because, you know, it's just like the whole argument between, is Blu-ray, like, is it as relevant as going from VHS to DVD? And I don't think it is, because, no, you know, a lot of people
have
are,
you
like,
seen The Dark Knight on a 1080p Blu-ray TV?
Oh, yeah.
You know, that looks amazing. I mean, it's almost like having IMAX, you know, but smaller.
Of course.
It's definitely a step up, I think. But
yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that it is an actual step up. I mean, but kind of in, like, a sense of, you know, VHS, not only was it just about picture quality going from VHS to DVD, not only was it just strictly about picture quality from going from the NTS signal to the ATSC signal, but it was about, you know, government mandates. It was about, hey, I have a functionality piece that's actually allowing me to skip tracks now, where in VHS that was utterly impossible. Like, you don't have those fundamental, I guess, those adaptations from, you know, HDTV to 3D HDTV. Like, there's no practical use of that will compel me to go buy it, other than just a novelty factor of I got stuff popping out of the screen, you know, or I can see more of a depth or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I know everyone is tired of, you know, Avatar being used for an example, but they did it the best. And that type of 3D, you know, if everything could be that type, I think it would be that big step. I don't know if you saw Avatar in 3D, Henry.
Yes.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Then you know what I mean when I'm saying it was it didn't have all kinds of stuff that just popped out at you. It added depth to it. Like when they had the holograms or whatever, you know, it actually added that depth to it where it kind of popped out, but it didn't pop out in a way like, you know, like one of the cheesy horror movies. Like I said, Final Destination, you know, where it had something that just popped out at you randomly, just, you know, say, ooh, look, it's coming right at you. It was just,
yeah.
And I mean, like the little butterfly creatures too. I mean, it's subtly, you know, just kind of popped out of the screen slowly. And it was just amazing. And, you know, it cost like $500 million for them to make that. And yeah. So, you know, that's where, you know, to make that technology. And I'm really hoping it shows more, you know, it's used more. And I think the big thing is when 3D TVs, the cost, really and truly, and they're coming down a lot. I mean, 6 months ago, it was like $3,000 for a 3D TV. Now you can find, I see bundles on like Newegg or some, you know, tech websites where it's $1,200 for a 40-something inch 3D TV with the Blu-ray player and the you know, glasses with the whatever random movie.
Yeah. And see, that's what I'm kind of talking about is like, I mean, they're practically trying to give this stuff away. Whereas, because I worked retail for the whole time all this stuff was going on, different adaptations of technology was going on. Like, we had customers coming in droves to buy DVD players because it was such a functionality, you know, practical use thing that made life easier. Like, I don't think that the mass consumer is looking at, you know, 3D HD TVs as in, like, okay, does this make my experience better? Yes, it does, because it looks awesome. It looks great. But like the functionality of it, it's not doing anything else but just doing that. It's just like Blu-ray now. Like, PS3 was banking on Blu-ray to catch on like a fire. They actually won the HD, you know, disc war, because HD DVD's dead, of course. But I don't even think Blu-ray has caught on the way they were thinking it was gonna do, because the practicality of going from DVD to Blu-ray isn't really not that big of a jump, you know.
Well, and also, you know, every single Blu-ray movie you buy comes with a combo pack. You get a regular DVD plus a digital
that's
just copy.
That's recently, and they do that so you can, you know, you can take that movie over to your friends who hasn't, you know, who hasn't gotten a Blu-ray player yet, and you can watch that movie.
I mean, that's kind of what he's saying. I mean, it hasn't caught on, so they have to bundle in both of the copies.
Well, the only reason it's kind of hard to compare HD and 3D TVs to, say, VHS and DVD, because, you know, you were with VHS to DVD, you were able to still use the same TVs you had. With HD and 3D, you have to buy brand new TVs and then have the devices with it. It's just that's a lot more expensive than, say, you know, just buying a player that can improve everything, like, you know, a DVD player.
Yeah, exactly.
But so I'm just talking about, it gets, you know, cheaper, I think more people will actually – I think it'll – you know, come out to the market more, because, you know, Blu-ray players are pretty cheap now, and HDTVs, you know, I see 30-something inch, 40 inch for like $399 now. So I think it's just at that price point where, you know, HDTVs are, people are starting to say, you know, it's at a fair price. I can pick it up. I can, you know, start to, you know, basically see what everyone's talking about this HD and Blu-ray and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, see, that's kind of like semi my point. Like I'm saying, like, you know, now Blu-rays, I mean, we all see the Amazon deals, you know, with Blu-rays are, you know, $10, $12. I mean, in most cases, some of the Blu-rays cost as, if not the same as their DVD counterpart. And Blu-ray players are what? I mean, $100. I mean, you can find some for $50. Some, you know, sometimes if you just want a Blu-ray player. So I guess my question is like, even if 3D was cost effective and it cost the same price as your normal HD TV, just, you know, standard 1080p HD TV, like, do you still think that the consumer will go out and, you know, and say, hey, I need 3D? Or do you think it's just, I mean, I just personally think that it's just a fad that's going to fade. It did it in the 50s, did it in the 80s. And I just think it's going to do it now, in spite of all the money that they're pushing towards it, because they're trying to sell this thing to us like it is the next, like you need a 3D TV because this is the next big home theater experience. And I just don't feel that that's so.
There's just too many factors to go with it. Like I said, it's a more costly thing. You need the actual TV instead of just a device with your with your regular TV. And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, when I go to Sears and look at the new TVs they have, the 3D TV, the glasses, someone swiped them, you know, it was attached to a cord and someone ripped the cord. Yeah. And it's been over 6 months and they have not replaced it. So it's stuff like that, you know, when people can't even see how well the 3D works.
Yeah, it's at Best Buy. You know, you have to ask for a help to get the thing unlocked so you can get the glasses out. And yeah, and the guy has to wait there with you as he tries to sell it to you.
Yeah, but and you know, the I think y'all said it on the, I can't remember which podcast you were on with Blue Man about the CES stuff. Was it?
Oh yeah, that was Preview Point.
Yeah,
11.
Yeah, and
or 9 or one of them.
Yeah, one of them. I don't know, but it was a couple Preview Points ago. But I think Blue Man said that Vizio's going to bring out 3D TVs that are affordable, like, you know, because Vizio's, they were the first to bring HD TVs that were affordable. And I think once they start being more affordable, and the glasses, I know a lot of people are complaining about glasses. Well, I got to wear glasses anyways for, you know, TVs to watch TV, yeah. Regular TV.
I'm in the same boat.
So stop your whining, people. I mean,
well, no,
they need to make a pair of glasses that's more comfortable, or, and an option to maybe, an option for existing glasses. Like,
yeah,
years ago I had a pair of sunglasses that had magnetic clip-ons to my actual glasses, so I could just clip them on and they became sunglasses. Maybe if they could do something like that, like magnetic clip-ons for people with regular glasses.
I wear glasses too. That's why I was saying get rid of the glasses, because I don't want to put something over my glasses.
Yeah, but I mean, but okay, I'll kind of use this example. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say either that, or have all the TVs come out with a universal type of glasses, because each different TV, you need a special type of glasses. You can't cross them.
And I think that's where the government will play a role. If they can mandate, you know, you need a specific type of frequency, or, you know, whatever, however the glasses run, you need to, you know, it needs to be a standard. That's where the government plays a role, as they did with, you know, analog and digital and so on and so on, the previous technology upgrades.
Yeah, but see, that brings me back to my original point. Like I don't think 3D in itself is, I don't think that 3D merits that big of a change. Like I just don't see the government getting behind 3D and making it the standard for all the manufacturers who manufacture TVs. Like I don't see that happening, because it's more of a novelty type thing, you know. But I was gonna say, like, with the 3DS. You know, I've been reading a bunch of posts and like a bunch of different you know hands-on reviews about it. And things like that, and people say who actually had hands-on time with it, you know, at E3 and other events, and they say, you know, hey, 3DS is cool. I mean, you play it for a little while, but after a while, they just turn the 3D off because it's kind of like it was kind of cool to see it, and I think that's what'll happen. Like, even if it becomes more cost-effective and you need no glasses whatsoever, like, I think that you'll get that TV in your home and you'll watch a couple movies in 3D. Every once in a while, you'll probably use it, but for the majority of stuff, you'll just turn the 3D off, and you won't even use it because it's I just don't see it as being that prevalent.
I can see that, but mm-hmm. I think as far as maybe the movie viewing goes, I could see it becoming more of a standard. I mean, TV wise, maybe not. I mean. I don't see watching How I Met Your Mother in 3D, or but you know, sports. I've heard the sports programs. DirecTV has been doing 3D. They started 3D back with the World Cup, and I've actually heard some interesting things on that. That it wasn't actually that bad. It was a pretty cool experience. So I mean, I think for certain types of media, it could be a thing to do. Like, you know, you want to just watch, you know, your action movies in 3D, or, you know, something like that, you know, or but you wouldn't want to watch, say, romantic comedies in 3D.
There is one kind of media that's going to determine whether it will become popular or not. Porn.
Oh, porn's already – they've already adopted 3D.
I mean, it was when, you know, when the Betamax and VHS wars, you know, porn went VHS, VHS won. Same way with the HD, DVD, and Blu-ray. Porn went Blu-ray. Blu-ray won.
Well, so it's the porn industry has already started to do 3D. How do I know this? The Sarcastic Gamer PlayStation podcast. I don't know if you guys have listened to them, but they're a bunch of crazy, rowdy bunch of podcast hosts that, you know, their humor is where basically dick jokes and, you know, basically immature stuff. But they've actually talked about that the porn industry has, you know, started to adopt 3D. Because, you know, you can get monitors. You can get, like, 3D monitors for, like, just a couple $100, actually.
Why 3D, people? Ron Jeremy supports it.
Oh, God. Anyways, I was really hoping you wouldn't bring up porn, but I kind of knew that it was going to be brought up by somebody.
I mean, it most definitely is relevant to the conversation because, I mean, he's right. That's pretty much the reason why VHS, you know, actually did went out, because it was able to bring it to a mass market and such, you know, because when you go back and look at Betamax looks better than VHS, and they still use it today because it's the best film. Most of the Laserdisc stuff, you know, even though they're enormously huge, they look better than DVD, you know. But
yeah, hey. I mean, I think it is a novelty at the moment, just because it's not accessible as much. But I do see it growing and being used more as it becomes, you know, cheaper. But like I said, I don't see, you know, watching standard TV, you know, like How I Met Your Mother in 3D. I don't see that, because there's really not a problem with watching, you know, that type of show in just either standard definition or HD. But this was a good conversation. it's just a thing we'll see, you know. This just speculation on all of our parts.
So final thoughts. 3D is going to be the next, you know, big thing or shift in home entertainment. I say no.
Stuart?
I don't know. I just, you know, it's
that's fair.
I really don't. I mean, I can see it going either way.
I would say certain aspects, like maybe the movie wise, you know, entertainment, yes, but not every day watching sitcoms and stuff like that. Like I've said before, I could definitely see people wanting to, when they go out and see, you know, Avatar on the big screen, them wanting to have that experience at home whenever they want. I could definitely see that being a thing.
Cool.
Because I hope it becomes a success, because I don't want to see it just – I don't want to see technology just stand at HD. I want there to be something, you know. As a tech geek myself, I want there to be something, whether it's 3D or something else. I just want there to be another leap.
Or there will be.
Yeah. But next we can, I guess, go into our I recommend section. I guess, Stuart, you want to go first with yours?
Okay.
Since it's first on the list.
Yeah, sure. My pick was a anime called Soul Eater. I picked this one because I had never seen an kind of an art style like it. Like it was just so different from anything I've seen before.
It kind of reminds me of what I've seen of like Bleach.
Yeah,
I've never watched Bleach, but as far as, you know, the screenshots and stuff I've seen, it kind of reminds me of that.
Yeah, I mean,
but
you know,
I actually really did like it, man. I mean, the animation was great. Some of the comedy was so-so, but it got better along the way. But
yeah,
man, the animation, man, just captivated me. Like when you boot up the first episode, when it has those, you know, that big wide pan.
Oh yeah, and yeah, that.
Is that hand drawn or is that the 3D, like CG kind of like?
I don't know. It looks almost CG.
It looks amazing, man.
But you know, I couldn't tell. Anyway, for those of you who haven't seen it, basically what it's about, Death kind of started his own Death Academy.
Grim Reaper.
Grim Reaper, yeah.
Yeah.
And boy, what a character.
Yeah, he's not what you expect. And like, you know, the students there, you know, like you got Meisters, which are basically people who use weapons. Then you've got their partners who become the weapons, which is kind of cool. And then they go around, you know, finding people who have turned to evil, and then they kill them, and then the weapons, they eat their souls. And if they get, you know, 99 evil souls and a witch's soul, you know, it becomes Death's personal weapon.
Yeah, and I do have to say, this is very Japanese.
Yeah.
If you're the type who likes very Japanese type animes, this is for you. This is definitely not an Americanized version of an anime. Because it'll go to serious, you know, action-y, and then it'll go, you know, in just a matter of seconds to crazy, goofy. I mean, it's just chaotic. The first episode was just totally chaotic.
Well, it really does that when you're looking at Death's son, Death the Kid, because he's OCD, and kind of the stuff with him just
yeah, but I'm liking it. I really am. I'm liking it just as well, because I do like that it's got an action side to it, but it does have that crazy Japanese touch to it. That, you know, that's why I watch anime, is because it's of the crazy Japanese, you know, humor and, you know, actions and the quirks and the feel to it, basically.
Well, what was your guys' take on the cat?
Oh,
the very magical cat.
Yeah.
Who turned into a lady.
Yeah, that was crazy, man, because they thought that I forgot what he was trying to do, but he was trying to reach the next level of being like a death site or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I guess you have to kill, you know, a witch to do so. So, you know, I mean, it talks like a witch, walks like a witch, and bathes like a witch. So,
but meows like a cat.
Yeah. So they wind up, of course, she actually wind up not being a witch, but that was pretty funny though.
Yeah.
But he had a good plan though, because he made her think that he was all like, you know, googly over and everything, that he, you know, turned on her.
Well, there's no thinking. He was googly over her. It's just when it came push to shove, he decided to stick with his partner.
Yeah, he kept getting bloody noses left and right.
Oh man.
But I like that character. I like the cat. I thought it was a very good character. And this is Funimation, right?
Yeah, it's yes. Funimation.
Funimation is probably one of the best studios for anime.
Yeah.
Most of my favorites have been Funimation, so I'm not surprised that this is as good as it is, and I plan on watching it all the way to the end.
Yeah, and Funimation usually has the best transfers, man. Like, I mean, as far as like the HD transfers, because I started watching it on my computer, and then I kind of got bored inside my room, so I went in the living room and started watching it on my Xbox. And man, it looked awesome, man, in HD.
So it's in HD when it's on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Because I was just watching it on my laptop.
Yeah, most of the transfers on most of that stuff that you watch on Netflix, that's anime, they kind of get the redheaded stepchild treatment, and they kind of just gloss over it. I mean, it's still in 16:9 widescreen, but the transfer just doesn't look HD. But this looked good. I mean, the colors were crisp and bright. It looked awesome.
Definitely gotta watch it on HD now. After that, it definitely a good pick. I'm always down for more anime. I've been trying to, ever since we had that show with Elf on anime, I've been slowly getting back into it. So
yeah,
glad I've been glad you recommended this. Next, unless or any more comments? Just gotta ask.
I really like The Sun and the Moon. They're great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all got like the teeth and the smiley face and everything all animated.
Yeah, and he's like, and like the moon is like dripping blood. I'm like,
yeah.
That's not creepy at all.
But yeah, that's what's crazy. It'll get all creepy and serious and really creepy, and then it'll jump to goofy, and you know, it's just awesome. I absolutely love it. I guess we can move on to the next, and that would be Nox, your pick. Which I'm looking at this, and our picks are in alphabetical order, unintentionally.
They are.
But, I guess, yeah, if you count the, but, Nox, your pick, which, I just want to, mention that, you had no idea what it was when you picked it, and I had to clarify what it actually was.
Yeah, well,
it's very misleading.
Exactly. Let me just give it a disclaimer before, I say it. My pick is Superman. You know, Superman Shazam, The Return of Black Adam. Basically, it's not what you think it is. Like,
it's actually
not like the
DC
previous
Showcase.
Right.
It's actually called DC Showcase, but DC Showcase is really tiny. and they have Superman, Shazam, you know, in big, because everyone knows Superman.
Right, exactly. But this is like a compilation of different shows. I never knew about – I didn't really know too much about the Spectre. But there's the Spectre. There's Green Arrow. There's the Shazam episode. And then what else is after the Green Arrow episode?
Jonah Hex.
Jonah Hex. Yeah.
They had that movie that came out with Megan Fox.
Yeah, Jonah Hex. Yeah, so my grandmother, she's a huge fan of the Shazam series from way back in the day. So when I told her that this was on Netflix, we sat down and actually watched it. So I watched the first episode of this showcase with my grandmother. And basically the Shazam episode, I won't give too much away, but it's not like the original Shazam where it's this powerful guy. It's actually just a, you know, just a random kid. And of course the kid, he's good. He's got a good heart. So he's chosen to be the next protector. Then of course Black Adam returns to Earth after, was it like 5,000 years?
5,000, yeah.
He was banished.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he returns after that. So him and Superman are fighting or whatever, whatnot. But of course Black Adam, he uses magic. And if you know about DC Comics, one of Superman's weaknesses is magic. But I mean, all in all, I mean, even these little small stories in bite-sized chunks, these little shorts, it was actually pretty good. I mean,
yeah, and the Superman Shazam, the first part of the DC showcase, that's actually the origin story of Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I didn't know a whole lot about Captain Marvel, except, you know, he's a little kid who says Shazam and turns into a really big buff guy. That was it. I knew nothing else. So
yeah, I had seen Captain Marvel on that other
Enemies.
Public Enemies, yeah. Superman, Batman.
The only time I've actually seen him.
So yeah. And my only problem is it was only 20 minutes. It was like 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
There wasn't really too much. Right when it grabbed you, it was over.
Yeah, because they were trying they was trying to tell like a quick little concise story.
And I started watching it, and I didn't know that it wasn't it was the DC showcase. I thought it was a Superman movie, so I went in watching it.
That's what everybody thought.
Yeah, I had to tell Knox when he was like, okay, I'm switching mine to this. I had to be like, you know, it's only 20 minutes worth of Superman, right? the rest is a couple other, you know, I guess B or C rated character stories.
Yeah,
because
call it Green Arrow,
the B Spectre. I would say Green Arrow is a B rated character.
I'd say he's well known enough where he's not B.
Well, I would say the top of, you know, the A characters would be Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Green Lantern, the Flash, those type. And then Green Arrow would be just a step below them. But, you know,
I kind of like Green Arrow.
I'm not saying he's not a good character.
Something to defend
him. I'm not saying he's not a good character. I'm just saying I don't think he's as well known as Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, you know, just because you know who the Green Arrow is doesn't necessarily mean, you know, Joe Schmo knows who the Green Arrow is.
Well, Joe Schmo, who watches Smallville, will know who he is. He's a major character.
Yeah, but not saying he's a bad character, just saying he's not as well known as the others.
Yeah. The second short they had was you guys going to help me on this one? Because it was a Spectre. I had absolutely no knowledge of this character at all.
Same.
But it was out of all three shorts, I love this one the best. I mean, out of all four shorts, I love this one the best. Yeah, because
more than the Superman.
Because it had I guess those were both on par with each other, but this one just. I like the whole 70s filter that it had, you know, with the
film grain,
the screen popping,
the
actual
grindhouse feel to it.
Yeah, and it had, like, all the characters were actually drawn with, like, the 70s feel. The cars were drawn like it was in the 70s, and just the whole it kind of gave you, like, I don't know, almost like a Twilight Zone kind of feel to it, because I guess he's dead, right?
I think so.
Yeah, so, you know, he kind of plays this, I guess, this self-righteous Grim Reaper, where, like, if you do bad things and you get away with it, like he goes, you know, for you, after you, and he kind of, you know, I guess, you know, does, you know, pronounces his own judgment, and you know, seeks out his own justice, I guess. But I liked it, man. It was cool, man. I mean, it was even kind of creepy at some points. You know, it's, I mean, the stuff that was going on,
that one probably had, like, the worst death known to man, death by paper cut.
The Spectre was just a bit short, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of felt that way, too.
I mean, it seemed interesting, but it was just so short, I was just confused when it was over with.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted more.
Yeah. Well, I think they explained it well, but I think I really wanted more from all the shorts, though. I mean, to be honest. But the next one was Green Arrow. One of you guys want to take this, or
Stuart, Mr. Fanboy?
Yeah, this, I kind of like this one. You know, it showed, you know, Green Arrow just being Green Arrow, really. Him being a hero with a kind of a funny side to him. I don't know. He was protecting a, you know, he thought was the princess, because it's a little girl, but actually was the queen of another country or something, who was had people after her.
Personally, I hated it.
Anybody?
I thought it was garbage.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
okay.
Just wanted to get a, you know, just get an emotion out of you. I enjoyed it. Another, you know, once again, it just seemed a bit too short. I'm thinking maybe these are, they did all these because they're trying to see whether the audience would be interested in, you know, us seeing more, like, an actual full-featured Green Arrow animated movie or whatever. I'm thinking maybe DC's was doing this for a test, basically testing to see how what we thought of all this.
Maybe.
But yeah, it was good. I was laughing at certain parts. I definitely was not laughing at the Spectre. I can say that pretty much.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that was designed to be laughable, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Henry, what did you think of Green Arrow?
I thought it was pretty good. Like I said, I don't know a whole lot about Green Arrow. But
basically, who Green Arrow is he's Batman with the ability to hit a target at an incredible distance.
He's Robin Hood.
That too.
He's Robin Hood.
But like you know, he has the, you know, the wealth of Batman and kind of technology that Batman has.
Present day Robin Hood.
Yeah, I don't know who his arch nemesis was, but that guy was pretty. He was pretty good too. I mean, as far as you know, with the arrows and stuff like that. And you know, when he got to that, I guess it was like a baggage area or something like that they were driving to, and he was like our last two encounters, I've beat you the last two encounters or something like that.
I think it was seven or eight.
Yes.
High number.
Yeah, I was like,
yeah, what? It was a.
I just wish that they would have, you know, explained more and kind of elaborated more on, I guess, the backstories, but I guess they really didn't have that much time to do it because of the fact that, you know, they had such a short time. But I would like to know about the villain that he was fighting against and stuff like that. Like, were they at one time, you know, friends or colleagues, or have they always been nemesis? But I think the last one is Jonah Hex. Poetic, you want to take this one? Because I know very little about Jonah Hex. I know they had a TV series at one time, right?
They had a full featured movie.
Yeah, I didn't know that it came from DC Comics either.
Yeah,
I knew it was a DC comic, but I had never seen anything about it, and I've been meaning to watch the movie just because, you know, it looked interesting. But Megan
Fox doesn't hurt.
Yeah, I mean that doesn't hurt at all. But actually, I could go a different way with that. But that's for another topic, another show. I honestly did not like the animated version. I just found it kind of boring. I don't know. It just didn't seem all that interesting to me. Stuart?
I knew it was a comic book movie, but I didn't know it was DC, so I was kind of surprised to see Jonah Hex on there. But, yeah, I didn't really find it incredibly interesting.
Yeah, so basically, I know, Henry, you said in the chat you did Green Arrow was the last one you watched. You should probably keep it that way. you're not missing anything.
Not really.
This kind of makes me hesitant on actually watching the movie. Full featured movie, which the full movie actually looked interesting. I mean, it didn't look like, you know, any award winning, you know, fantastic, but it looked like a good popcorn flick movie, I thought. But yeah. I don't know now.
Yeah, it's been in my instant queue. I'm getting close to it, so.
Oh, it's on Instant Watch?
No. Did I say Instant Queue? I meant DVD queue.
Okay.
I meant DVD queue.
I was about to say, I would have watched it a lot sooner if it was on Instant Watch. But yeah, I do want to make the comment that in between each of the features, it basically shows a comic shop, and it's going around the comic shop, you know, a little bit before, and I kind of like that, the way they did that. It was kind of interesting how that comic shop had only DC comics and nothing else.
Yeah, I was looking for Marvel stuff or
exactly.
Like, did I see a Spider-Man somewhere?
That makes you know it was not a real comic shop. It was probably something they created themselves. But
oh yeah, they pre-filmed it.
But I did think that was an interesting way to, you know, basically, start out the DC showcase and basically transition into each of the newer ones. I guess after that we can go into my pick, which is not animated or not a cartoon at all. It's an actual movie. It's an old movie, but it's called The Outsiders.
Yep.
And it's from a book by S.E. Hinton, which is actually a female in who chose the name S.E. Hinton because at the time female writers weren't getting, you know, weren't selling, you know, no one really took female writers serious at the time. And we actually read the book way back in, I think, seventh grade. It was seventh grade for me.
I was going to say the same thing, man. I have the fondest memories of reading this book and also watching the film in seventh grade, man.
And it's just a good book. I mean, it's a good book and a good movie. And it's got the movie. It just has an outstanding cast.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at this, Matt Dillon, Patrick Swayze, Emilio Estevez, Ralph Macchio. Yeah. I mean, it's just an outstanding cast. And I don't know if it what awards it's won, but I'm sure it's won awards. It's just a it's a heartwarming movie, and basically it's set back in like basically kind of greasers, you know, greasers like from Greece. Yeah.
Greasers and socias.
Greases and socias, and basically, you know, turf wars, and one of the characters, oh, what was his name?
Dally.
Was it Dally that killed the soci?
No, it was Johnny.
Johnny. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Johnny. One of them kills the soci. Self defense, you know, obviously, because they were having a big gang fight, and they go on the run, and it's just a fantastic movie, and you know, all these movies are on Instant Watch. I just have to say that yet again, because you know, and we'll have the links so you can click them and go straight to it to add to your queue if you want to. But if you haven't seen this, it's a really good movie. I've always thought this thought of this as on par with like Gone with the Wind type, you know.
Funny, because I mentioned Gone with the Wind a couple times.
Exactly.
I always thought of it like because when I watched it back in seventh grade, like it reminded me of Stand By Me, but just a little bit more older, like kind of like the adolescent kind of feel to it, you know, kind of like, you know, like the rebel stage and You know, stuff like that.
And I do have to say, this is probably one of the only books I was forced to read in school that I enjoyed.
Exactly.
and that does say a lot. I mean, and it does have, like we mentioned, it has a great cast, so I definitely check it out. Stuart, your thoughts? You've kind of been quiet.
Yeah, you guys have been just taking all my points. Just
you were forced to read it in school?
No, I actually wasn't. I heard of it, and I've heard, you know, like this made, you know, Tom Cruise's and Emilio Estevez's, you know, kind of push them to the top.
Yeah.
But you know, I'd never seen it or anything.
I really
liked it. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. I don't know. Looking at the box cover or whatever. You know, I'd expect, you know, more of everybody, except of just I wasn't expecting the two. It to focus on Pony Boy and Johnny as much as it did, and the bromance they had.
Yeah, but see, you got to remember at this time though. Like, they weren't the Tom Cruise, Patrick Swayze's that we think of today. Like, they were just, you know, they were just Tom Cruise, Patrick Swayze. You know what I'm saying? Like, they weren't what we have an idea of today. So, you know, I mean, they had what? I mean, it was like almost what, like 8 characters plus, you know, all the little minor characters they had to kind of go through, you know, so. I mean, they couldn't really spend a whole lot of time on each one, and the story was really about Ralph Macchio's character. And I just like the fact that you got to see, you know, Ralph Macchio's range in this movie. Like, I mean, the kid could actually – well, he's not a kid anymore, but at that time, he actually had range. I mean, he could actually act other than just doing, like, Karate Kid, you know?
Yeah.
This was before Karate Kid, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess because, you know, he looks a lot younger than he does in Karate Kid.
And I gotta say, it's based in Oklahoma. So I just gotta say that because there's not much movies where it's based in Oklahoma. But it came out early 80s, 83, and it's not a long movie. It's only about 90 minutes long.
Yeah. Short,
but I mean, the ending will get you. The ending is just very emotional.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I would definitely say this is like a family movie. Because it's PG-13, so there are some stuff, but overall, I would say this would be a good family movie to watch.
The most they showed was like a top down pan of like some blood, you know, on the ground and like the water fountain or whatever. But I won't give too much away. But that's probably about the most they showed. I don't think there was any cursing in it at all or nothing like that.
Yeah, today would be rated maybe PG.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, this has been on my list. I've just been waiting for it because I've just had fond memories of this and seeing that it was on Instant Watch. I just had to share it in case, you know, y'all hadn't seen it. And Stuart hadn't seen it, so.
Nope.
Cool.
And that's what this whole section's all about.
Ba-do-boo-boo!
And with that, I guess, Stuart, it's your geek question of the week.
The geek question of the week. If you had a time machine and you could stop any major or personal event in your past or bring someone to today's time, whether it be past or future, you know, what event would you stop or who would you bring?
I think as far as bringing something or stopping an event in the future, how would you know who's in the future and what, unless it's like your future self?
Well, that could be one thing, or just, you know, hey, hot girl, come here. that kind of thing.
Well, okay. Hey, girl, come with me in my time machine.
My hot dub time machine.
Oh, that was a bad movie.
That was a bad movie.
But I don't know. I know we had a lot of people who said, you know, I wouldn't want to do anything. I want, because of changing history, butterfly effect.
We had two people say that. Out of these like seven, we got
we actually had seven. Wow.
Yeah, we had quite a few.
Yeah, we kind of touched on this on the Who Am I episode 5 of Nagger Mailman podcast.
And they had episode 3, which was all about time travel.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we kind of touched on this a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I really wouldn't do anything. I would just probably just observe. I would just probably just observe, man. Just kind of, you know, just observe, you know, a certain time period and just kind of, you know. I mean, if I had the ability to do it, I probably wouldn't mess with anything just because of the fact that, I mean, time is time. And, you know, whatever happened, happened. You know, the whole lost thing. So I probably would just observe, you know, because I wouldn't want to screw anything up.
Yeah. I would go to an old-time movie premiere and pull out my cell phone. Wait, no.
You freak everybody out?
No. I'm just making fun of that one story where they had a picture of someone and they said it was someone from the future, you know, that old time movie premiere. I don't know if you guys remember that story that happened, but like I said on Who Am I number 3, when we were talking about time travel, I would probably just go back and observe like my grandfather, because my grandfather passed away like a couple years before I was actually born. And throughout my life, I've heard, you know, from my grandma and my dad, all kinds of stories about my grandfather and what kind of person he was. And I'd just probably go back in time and observe and, you know, try not to mess with anything, but just try to see what kind of person he actually was and basically get to know him through observation. I wouldn't go up to him and do anything, you know, introduce myself or anything like that, because I wouldn't want to change anything, but I just observe and watch and see what kind of person he was.
Yeah, my thoughts on it is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but it's an animated series called The Boondocks, and there's an episode on season 2, I think it's season 1 or season 2, one of those, where Martin Luther King comes back, or he doesn't come back. Like, it's like he never died or whatever. He just kind of fell into a coma, but he woke up one day and he comes back and, you know, kind of observes stuff. And the episode's pretty funny, but there's a lot of truth in the episode. But me personally, I mean, you guys know that I'm a man of faith. I probably would bring back Jesus, man, just because it's a whole lot of, it's just a whole lot of misinterpretations, you know, misconceptions about what his teachings were and things like that. I would just, you know, bring him back and just let him speak, you know, to everybody and just kind of, you know, I don't know, you know, I think that would be cool.
And there were parts in the Bible where it skipped, you know, it skipped. So, you know, that could probably be it.
Yeah.
Somebody came back with a time machine and napped him.
And that's why we don't know anything about him from this period to this period. But Stuart, what about you? Would you send the robot back in time to kill Sarah Connor?
Have you seen this boy?
Well, I'm actually in the same boat you are, Will. My grandfather died when I was like 2, and the only memory I have of him is him being sick. So, you know, I would like to go back and kind of know kind of the person he was.
Alrighty.
And you know, I keep hearing stories about my dad when he was little, but he won't tell me any of them. Like, just like, oh, your dad has some stories, but he refuses to tell me.
Is he embarrassed or something? Or
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, he wouldn't be the type of person to be embarrassed. Just he just won't tell me for some reason, and I would like to go back and find out why.
See, my dad has stories that he has actually told me that I would not want to go back, because I probably would not end up coming back, because he's done some crazy shit in his life, or so he says. Well, so I'd be kind of scared to go and see some of the stuff he did.
Okay. And also, you know, just go back in time to, you know, King Arthur days and just blow everybody's mind with technology. And probably be burned at the stake for witchcraft, but...
Yeah. I gotta bring up Futurama again. You gotta make sure you don't become your own grandfather or anything.
Yeah.
You do gotta, you know, don't get with anybody in the past. Just...
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Make sure you stay clear of any females in the past.
Or if you do, bring them forward in time with you.
Yeah.
So that way that won't happen.
But see, you get into the whole thing, like, if you bring them forward in time, do they start to age quickly?
Or they could have been that could have been the mother of the man who cures cancer.
Or that could have been what was supposed to happen all along.
See, that's the thing where it gets to your mind kind of exploding.
You know, predetermined destiny. It was supposed to happen anyway.
Yeah. Nice going, Stuart. You just ruined cancer cure.
How does the doctor say it? Timey-wimey?
Oh, I forgot.
Oh, I forgot. I always forget the saying.
Wibbly-wobbly,
timey-wimey. Yes. There we go. I think that's the most that basically sums it up. Even if time travel doesn't exist, just thinking about it, that sums it up. But the feedback we've gotten, Stuart.
These are all from Twitter. You know, you can whenever you see the question of the week, just reply to it on that or on Facebook, and you'll hear your answers here, just like this one. The Prophet 209 says, I'd kill baby Hitler or stop the Kennedy or King assassinations.
Yeah. I think, Knox, you brought this point up at the Who Am I 5. If you killed Hitler, maybe Joseph Stalin would have came to power and taken control of, you know, everything. And
Oh, yeah. That was I think that was Blue Man. I kind of
it was Blue Man. Okay.
Yeah, I just kind of touched on it though. But yeah, I mean, you got things like that, or if not, I mean, do the Jews, you know, take over Europe, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different varying factors, you know. So it's like, you know, or does Hitler, you know, by him dying, does somebody else just rise up in his place, you know? Like, it kind of goes back to the whole thing, like, you know, I think somebody brought this up in the time travel podcast, where it's like, no matter how many times you try to stop something from happening, like, it happens inevitably anyway. So,
yeah, some things are meant to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Others? You said we had like 7?
Yeah.
That seems like the most we've had so far.
Yeah, we had quite a few on this one. I'm quite happy. Lasbury on Twitter. If I had a time machine, I'd visit biblical icons like Abraham, Elijah, Solomon, and Jesus. All lived above earthly distractions.
Alrighty. Nice.
Yeah, good luck trying to understand them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. This goes back to the Who Am I technology episode. You would just need a device that could translate for you. But,
yeah.
Yeah. Next, I guess.
Next is from Poca Cookie, who was previously known as Cookie360. He changed his name. But I think if I had a time machine, I would change. I wouldn't change anything, but I would like to collect geek stuff from the past. I don't know what geek stuff from the past would be, but good on ya.
Well, Spider-Man number one edition.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Never opened. Go back in time. Bring a dime.
Okay.
Mickey Mantle baseball card.
Okay. I can see. Okay. I wasn't thinking like that. I'm like, but an old computer, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Tin Pan Alley. Go back in time, see the fall of Rome, and what to be prepared for. I don't know, is he saying that our civilization is going to fall too?
I don't know, maybe.
I'm not sure.
that's what he said.
Alrighty. Hopefully it doesn't, but okay. History books, that'll teach you.
Yeah. See, from page to screen, I'd not change history, that's risky, and I'd not bring anyone forward. Nah, boring but true.
That was a cop-out answer.
That was. And so is the next one. And change the world? Hell no. And that was from Fadios.
Those were cop-out answers. Our question wasn't would you or would you not, or it was who would you or what would you do?
Yeah. And Fadios mentions Butterfly Effect, which is an awesome movie.
Okay, next.
Next is from Scooter Prime. I would go back in time to high school, drop an envelope with a weighted 20-sided die and with a note saying, use in case of dragons. I guess he's a D&D player.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he discovered it late, or...
Yeah, that could be.
I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of. I don't really understand that too much. But, yeah.
And then the last one is from Deshane Vox. I really like this one because this one's good. I would go back a few weeks and order a couple extra boxes of Do-Si-Dos.
What? What's a Do-Si-Do?
You don't know what a Do-Si-Do is?
We're from the South, no.
Girl Scout cookies. They were just delivered not too long ago. Like, I just got my box of Thin Mints not too long ago.
Why do they call them Do-Si-Dos?
That's just the name of the cookies. You guys don't have Girl Scout cookies?
We got Girl Scout cookies. They're just not called Dozy Doughs. Maybe it's just a regional thing.
I guess so.
But yeah, that'd be interesting.
Okay, and that was the question of the week. Follow us on Twitter to find out what next week's question will be, and then you can hear your answer on here, just like them.
And finally, I got one little topic I want to quickly touch on. That's kind of, you know, if you're a podcaster yourself, this is kind of a big deal, really and truly. iTunes has basically gotten rid of the ping feature, which when you submit a podcast to iTunes and it gets, you know, approved, they send you an email with your, you know, the link to your podcast on iTunes and a link where you can click to basically ping it and basically tell it, you know, I uploaded a new podcast, update the feed. And they remove this, and they're only going to check for new podcasts once a day. So if you got a podcast that if you put out a podcast and you put it out super early because you want to be the first to, you know, basically touch on something that just happened, and you have to wait a whole another day for it to check, that could be a problem. And you know, basically your iTunes users have to wait before they can get it on iTunes. They have to wait for iTunes to check it for their daily once a day, you know, checking. And that's kind of a big deal, I think.
I think what they should do, that if they do this, if they could somehow on iTunes or alert the iTunes user or the poster, give us the timestamp schedule of when they're going to do it. So say, for instance, they do a sweep at 12 a.m. in the morning, and they do that every 24 hours. Let us know that, so that way we can try to get the content in or on, you know, Libsyn accounts or whatever, you know, you guys use, or whatever podcasters use on your account before that deadline, so you know that it'll get, you know, swept. But even if that, I mean, you got stuff, you know, if people that go to E3 at different trade shows and everything, or interviews that you kind of just trying to get post up, if they don't do it for 24 hours, I mean, it's not going to get posted as soon as you, you know, try to upload it. I mean, as quickly as possible onto the iTunes marketplace. So,
yeah, and I see, you know, hey, just uploaded the new Geeks for the Win on Zune and here, and iTunes will be tomorrow. That
right.
doesn't really yeah. work well. That doesn't sound as good as, you know, episode 32 on iTunes, Zune, and, you know, here, and we give the link. Haven't, you know, I don't know. That it's a big problem, and I don't think that many podcasters are really aware of it, honestly. And I kind of going to, you know, tweet the article to a couple, you know, other podcasters that we know, you know, once the episode airs, and tell them, you know, if you think this is a concern, check out our episode, because we talk about it. But because I think it is a big concern, because it basically, you know, takes away a good portion of our audience for, you know, a day, up to a day.
Yeah, especially our audience, because, you know, our audience wants information, and they want it now, you know, and they want it as quickly as possible.
Well,
just like we do, you know, so that kind of hinders, you know, a lot of podcasters out there.
Well, I mean, as far as some of our more geekier audience members or listeners, they could just take our RSS feed and put it in iTunes and do it that way and not have it straight from iTunes.
Yeah.
They could do it that way, but you know, the average, you know, the average person who's not, you know, who doesn't want to go through all that, who just searches the Geeks FTW, subscribe, they've got to wait an extra day. And that, I mean, it's just, Stuart, we've talked. What do you think of it?
I honestly don't understand why they took it away. I think it's stupid. And the article that you have here in the show notes links to like a thing where you write a bunch of names down.
Petition?
Petition, yes, thank you.
Oh, petition.
A petition to have Apple bring it back.
Yes, and that's headed by it's actually headed by the blueberry.com, which is where we have our the player on our site is a Blueberry player, and it also collects the stats for our you know, how many people are downloading off of iTunes, Zune, what countries, stuff like that. It does that for us, and it's actually was created by the first guy to ever write a book about podcasting. One of the very first people ever to podcast. So he's all, you know, up in arms about this. He's the host of Geek News Central, which is a pretty big podcast. But he's all up in arms about this because it's just you know, basically hinders us, you know, us podcasters. And especially since iTunes is one of the big places for people to get podcasts. I mean, they basically created the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, iPod, podcast. I mean,
exactly.
And now they're doing this to us after, like, I think 6 years. It's crazy. But yeah, we'll have the show notes. You can check out the link. And like Stuart said, it is on the post for the show notes. Link is the link to the, I guess, the petition. So
actually, I think it's a link to a link to a link to the petition. Got to go through a couple steps.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be too hard to find. I mean, but yeah. Definitely wanted to touch on this and maybe let our podcasting brethrens know, because this is kind of a big deal. And you know, who knows whether enough people actually complain if Apple will bring it back. Hopefully so. But with that, we can, wrap things up. You can leave us feedback. We love feedback, of course. It lets us know how we're doing, you know, maybe things we can improve on, or just stuff that, you know, correct us if we said something that's wrong and unaware of, you know, let us know. You can leave us feedback on Facebook, you know, search the Geeks FTW, Twitter, you know, twitter.com/TheGeeksFTW. You can leave a voice message at our voice line at 1-347-GEEK-FTW or 1-347-433-5389. And you can also send us an email at thegeeksftw@gmail.com. You can view all those, you know, on our website, the homepage, I think there's links, or on the actual post for the podcast. You know, we do like iTunes reviews. iTunes reviews do help us, you know, get exposed to more people. And, you know, we'll give you a shout out, you know, if you leave us an iTunes review. It's only fair. There's also the OFRN forums you can check out, which there's a link on our site to the forums. And speaking of iTunes reviews, as I said, the OFR guys, I think they a couple iTunes reviews away from hitting 30, if not already. I don't think they've reached 30 yet, but they're giving away Call of Duty Black Ops for the Xbox 360. So definitely check that out. And, you know, we normally record on Mondays at 7:30 Central Standard. That's when we start to get things started. And You know, check us out on Ustream, or there's a link to the site as well. Basically, just check out Twitter and Facebook. We post when we're going to do our live show. So, yeah. I guess shout outs. Stuart?
I would like to shout out, let's see, Vic Joe, Cthulhu 80, Devious Mr. Matt, and did I miss anybody?
I think that did.
Oh, and Scott Run.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were our viewers for most of the show.
And there, we had a couple that were just that didn't log in just as guests, so
yeah.
Make sure you log in so we can give you a shout out.
Yep, and then of course shout out to our writers. I can't think of everybody. You know, Knox, of course.
Cookie Elf.
Cookie. And
think that's it?
Yeah, that's our normal writers. And to the OFR guys. So.
Alrighty.
That's everyone.
Henry?
Yes. Man, shout out to you guys, man. Shout out to, like you said, all the writers for the Geeks for the Win. Man, we've been rolling this past week, man. We've got a bunch of content posted up. So visit the Geeks for the Win, FGW.com. Also, shout out to the Geeks with Color. Geeks with Color. They had me on their show. Good group of guys. Shout out to Cerebral Strike. Shout out to Q. Shout out to TPS. Everybody who encompasses that. Scar, Scoba, Sherry. And just shout out to everyone out there. Shout out to AA too, man. Anthony Alex on Angry Mailman. Go listen to the Who Am I episode number 5. Featuring yours truly and also William Poetic Soul, and shout out to everybody in the podcasting community or communities.
Alrighty, and yes, we were on episode 5 with us with Anthony Alex, Blue Man from OFR, and Deshane Fox from the tag community. So that was definitely a good podcast. I haven't listened to it yet. I know we had some issues, but I'm sure it sounds good. The topic was future technology, and I kind of had to. I saw a post on Twitter, and I kind of had to say what's going on now and be nosy to get an invite because I knew it was happening and I wanted an invite. So, but yeah, shout outs to the OFRN, and that's about it. This has been shout out to all the females, because tomorrow is Valentine's Day. Hopefully, hopefully you got somebody who cares about you, and we'll show you that. With that said, this has been episode 32, and we will see you next time.